Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Thursday Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel, Joel Elkanen, Dennis Dick with you this morning, like every day. Why are we down? No one's really sure. Is it follow through from the Fed yesterday? Is it just pessimism about lack of a stimulus deal? Nervousness heading into the election? We've got a quad witch coming up. All these factors playing in here, but we were weak at the close yesterday, weak again overnight. So we'll talk about that and sort of where that leaves us now, where that leaves tech in particular now, and as we head into what is really a vacuum of catalysts here for the next few weeks. Two guests on the docket for the day, Mark Chicken will be on at 8:15. And then at 8:35, we have a new guest, Will Hershey. He's the co-founder and CEO of Roundhill Investments. He's got the NERD and the BETZ ETFs, esports and sports betting. So we'll talk about those trades with Will at 8:35. I'll bring Joel on now. Actually, before I bring Joel on, I want to see some more likes today. If we can get up to 300, that will make my day. And now, Joel, update us on what has happened here overnight, because we are weak, as I mentioned.
Yeah, good morning, traders and investors. We're in the red by 1.32%. That's 44 and a half handles. And we're 25 points off the low of the session. Very weak attempt at a rally last night. Got about 7 points above your closing price before we turned around. As I mentioned, 33.10 and a quarter, that's a big number. Last week's low is what we want to all keep an eye on, and that was 32.85 and a quarter. That's your weekly low from last week. You have crude down 9 cents after a nice rally over $40. Potential double top in crude at 40.34 and 40.39. Gold meandering in the 1900 handle, down $18.80 at 1951.70. Silver moving more than gold, down 1.6% or 45 cents at 2703. And Bitcoin, not once what it was, just hanging out here at 11,000, lost that level overnight, down $130 at 10,885. So, Dennis, why did the market get so upset over stuff that we already knew from Jerome Powell?
I don't know, but it's trading technically right now. And if you look here, here is the issue that I have with the overall market. The Qs, look at the Qs. Don't look at the SPY, look at the Qs. Because the SPY was saved a little bit, and not that it was saved at all, but it was helped yesterday by this rotation of value. But the market money started flying out of tech right after Powell started talking. And if you look where we failed on the Qs, and we have multiple highs just around the 280 level. And yesterday, perfect, really double top from the day before, 280, 45, 280, 36. And then we rolled over and sold off all day, all like for the last 2 hours. That sell-off has continued this morning. We are off the overnight lows, but still significantly lower. And just like that, we go from the top of like the eight-day range to the bottom of the eight-day range, just like that. So do we bounce the first time down at that low that we made 4 days ago, down 266 on the Qs? I think we do. I think we bounced there maybe once, but this market is starting to look even more broken than it did before. We were talking about the trend, and the key for this market was something that you said a few days ago is Apple. Apple 110 was critical to hold. Full disclosure, I'm still long Apple in the long-term portfolio, not selling out of that. But if you're in it for a trade, that 110 is getting breached here right now. And that's concerning for the overall market.
I agree. We talked about that. Got a really nice bounce off it, really two times. And now you are below it. I don't think we have a wager here because we're too far off.
Well, we're on the same side.
Well, we're on the same side too. But I just think a little bit longer term, I think that 35, 76 and a quarter, I think that's going to be the high for a long time.
Why?
One thing the market doesn't like is uncertainty. And you are coming into probably two of the most uncertain periods of time in the United States history coming into this election. And I don't see any major catalyst between now and then. I know earnings season starts in October, but uncertainty, the outcome of the election, either way, people feel fear either way. And yeah. I just think that the prudent thing is to be on the sidelines. And I just don't see us ripping back up. You got the overhead supply issue now. Mm-hmm. A lot of different things. You had the fluff rally in Apple and Tesla off yep. the splits, Snowflake, just wild, you can keep saying these things, but this is more feel and more technical than, the economy is going to hell. This is just looking for catalysts.
I agree. I think the uncertainty of who's going to win. I think the market wants Trump. Like, we're not political. I'm not saying what we want. I'm saying I think the market wants Trump because it knows it gets the certainty of, one, that, we have a president that is very much in favor of keeping the markets up at any cost. And we've seen that. We see him talk about the Dow on a regular basis. We know Biden will not be that way. Biden will not be focused on Wall Street. He will be more focused on Main Street. And I think the market's concerned about that as well. So as you get closer, and if Biden continues to lead in the polls, I think the market does in fact start to price some of that in. So is that what we're seeing here now? A little bit. We're seeing the fluff, that came out of, the markets as well. I mean, it just got silly. Apple going up, up, up because of the split, Tesla going up, up, up because of the split. And now you're seeing, some repositioning and saying, hey, wait a second, I can lose money in the stock market, because anybody who started in March, April, May, June, July, even August, didn't realize it could lose money in the stock market. Now they're starting to realize it, and a little bit of fear, maybe the FOMO turning into actually FOLO, which would be fear of losing out. And they're losing some physical money here right now in some of these tech stocks that have been darlings. So we've turned. Sentiment's turned to a certain extent. The buy the dippers are still trying, but they're being met with major resistance from the sell the rippers. And are the sell the rippers going to, win over here for the short term? They might. So again, I mean, it depends how you're positioned. If you got a lot of cash, maybe you're, and like I do, because I raised a lot of cash and didn't get that money back in. You might be, nibbling on some stocks, nibbling on some good companies. But coming in here and saying stocks are cheap, I got to load up. Stocks are not cheap. Stocks, they just said on CNBC, are the most expensive they've been in 20 years on a, on a multiple, on a valuation perspective. So, when you got Snow trading 100 times revenues or whatever the hell it is, I mean, it's a silliness.
Allow me to counterpoint here for a minute.
Please.
If you've been one of these people that's been sitting on the sidelines this entire summer, you've been waiting for your moment, for your pullback, and you missed it in March, right?
Yeah.
Well, you got it. Finally, something.
You're getting it in some stocks, but right. Is it really a pullback? Like Joel is saying, you can look at Apple and say, oh, what a deal at 109. Well, is it really? And I'm just completely talking about this on my book here, because I own Apple, and I've owned it for a long time. But I mean, what's that?
You're talking fundamentals in Apple, which,
And fundamentals do matter, because this isn't some super growth company here. This is a company that's, basically a big cash cow with the iPhone. And yes, they have some other products, and yes, they have the watch. But I mean, think about Apple for the last decade, 5 years. It's been iPhone, and they've been talking about the watch. I mean, we're still talking about the watch 5 years later. So, to pay 30, 31 times for a company that really isn't growing isn't really that, cheap. When Apple back in March, when it got down to about 17, 18 times net out cash, I mean, that's cheap. 16 times, 15 times, that's cheap. When you start talking, and valuation, we haven't talked a lot on the show because the market hasn't given two shits about valuation for a while. But you know what? When the markets start to fall apart, that is the investors that hold the market up. It's the value guys. And I'm saying the value guys are not interested in a lot of stocks here yet, because stocks aren't cheap. So if you have the Momo guys getting the hell out because trend is broken, and you're hoping for the value guys to hold the market up, well, the value guys are still sitting on the sideline saying, look, I'm paying 24, 25 times in a pandemic, on a lot of companies here. I'm out. So, I mean, that's why you do have this potential that it could get uglier. Now, we don't know. Nobody's got a crystal ball, and anybody who says they know where the market's going doesn't know anything. So we don't know where the market's going. We're just laying out different scenarios. And I'm saying, if you're way underinvested, maybe you pick some companies that you feel like, are okay here right now. You know, but am I coming here and buying snow because snow is going to go to 200 times revenues? No, I'm not. I'm not just, you know, throwing money on the hope trade that I'm going to find some, you know, a bigger dummy to buy it from me afterwards. You've got to use some fundamentals when it starts to fall apart. When it's all going up, it's all Momo, it's all growth. Use your trend. Trend is your friend. Fundamentals don't matter. They're starting to matter to a certain extent here right now. So we need to just be cautious with just randomly buying any stock on a pullback. You know, you can look at even something like a Fastly and say, oh, what a nice pullback here. It's $79. It was 116. This is a cheap stock. Well, it's not cheap. It was $20 back in March. So you got to put it in perspective, is that there's still a lot of fluff in this market, Mr. Alcon. And you were talking about fluff trade. Yeah, it's still there.
Snowflake fluff. Just to wrap up this discussion and to move on, I mean, I am looking forward to the 2024 election. That's all I can say, because I don't know what the hell is going to happen either way in the next 4 years. So if anybody's got any good candidates on either side for 2024, let me know, because fasten your seatbelt, folks. I voted for Eisenhower, you know, whatever. I wasn't quite born yet. But
I was going to say, I didn't know you were quite that old, Joel. Yeah, but we know you're old.
I like Ike, you know, but no, this is just such an, you know, I'm no history buff, was a political science major, but I just, you know, uncertainty. And that's one thing the market does a lot. I see a whole hell of a lot of uncertainty out there, and a lot of different things. So we'll see. The market is famous for climbing a wall of worry. You have a very accommodative Fed. I don't know how much, you know, how many more bullets they have in the chamber. They'll figure something out.
Oh, yeah, they will.
Oh, they said yes.
Unlimited bullets. Unlimited bullets. You know, they were going to let inflation run rampant. You know, they say it's under 2%, and we know that's just complete lies is what that is. Yeah, you can look at the data. That is all lying data to you. I mean, you look at lumber price up 189%. You know, my housing quote, you know, going up, you know, basically, you know, 30% from what it was last year. I mean, but we don't have any inflation. And you look at, you know, yeah, 2x4, my dad complained it was $3, $4 in 2 months ago, is now $8. I mean, maybe it's just lumber, but it's not. There's other things that are going high too. I mean, I look, you know, even the playset, you know, that my kids are playing on outside, you know, it was, you know, $1,000 or $1,100. I look at that price of that now, the same playset is $1,600. You know why? Because all the parks are closed and you can't get a hold of them. So they jack the price up on them all. So, I mean, don't kid yourself. We haven't had 2% inflation ever. It's always been higher than that. They just take everything out that's inflationary, but it's a hell of a lot higher than 2%. So don't listen to Powell. They're all using data that lies. It's way higher than 2%. We had Gil Morales on here. Remember when he was on a year ago? And he was saying if they put everything, he did a paper on it. And he said if they put everything back in that they took out of the index, of the way they calculate inflation, we're running around 7%. That feels right. We have not run 2% forever. So that's just, you know, just BS.
Does anybody know the symbol for the lumber futures on TradeStation? I have it. If they do, I just like that because I know this is a good indicator of inflation, but I'll try and find it.
I mean,
it
just
here.
Think of the housing prices and what's happened. You know, if you go back and think about, Joel, you've priced out, you know, houses, and obviously Canadian, US, but, you know, we were building in Canada at $200 a square foot 15 years ago, you know, pretty nice stuff, $200 a square foot. Now that's $400 to $500 a square foot. Yet they're telling us there's no inflation, but your biggest cost to your consumer is your house. And you see housing prices exploding. Why do you think houses keep going up and you know, everywhere really? It's because the input cost of building a house are a hell of a lot more than they used to be. So, I mean, this is just, you know, nonsense that, oh yeah, we're running, you know, our biggest risk is deflation. Give me a break. That's just garbage.
And then I don't even want to think what's going to happen. If the Fed has to start bumping up rates, then, I mean, they said, I don't know. A lot of things here. Let's move on to
Print this much money, just to continue on, I'll bring Mark in here right now too, but when you print this much money, it's basic economics. works. It's got to chase the same amount of money keeps getting printed. It's going to push prices up. You keep giving out money, it's going to push prices up, and it is. And we are seeing serious inflation here in certain areas. You know, maybe your loaf of bread isn't up that much, but Joel, I can remember buying a loaf of bread for 99 cents. Can you still get a loaf of bread anywhere for 99 cents? I remember that not so long ago. What's Mark think about the inflation argument? Because I'm arguing that inflation is a hell of a lot higher than 2%.
That's on mute, Mark, first.
Oh, Mark's on mute.
See, yep.
He's still on mute. There he is.
There we go.
I think inflation probably is understated relative to what it really is, but I don't think that matters from an investment point of view.
It can eventually, though. Like, what are your thoughts here? I mean, we get
eventually we're all dead. Come on.
Not long enough. That's zero hedge talking there, Mark. No, not a long enough time frame. We all go to zero.
No, it's John Maynard Keynes.
Is that where it's from? Is that where zero hedge took it from?
Sure. The Fed basically pivoted from talking about inflation as the driver for rates to unemployment or employment, which is good and bad. They basically said, unless and until we get acceptably full employment, rates are going to stay low. Well, that's not happening for a long, long time, which is why people are talking about 2024.
So, well, how do you play this market? I mean, we've got everybody's want a pullback to buy. We get the pullback, and now, you know, I'm nervous about it. Maybe I should be just backing up the truck because we're going to continue to see asset prices soar and this free money for everyone Fed that's out there. Or does it all change because of the election? We get a new president in there who's not so focused on the markets. He's more focused on Main Street. Are there implications there? What does Mark Chaykin think about the landscape going forward here?
I'm going to be like the two-handed economist today. I think it's a bifurcated market. You want to sell strength, particularly earnings reports, which are going to be coming up in October. But Adobe is, you can find a million of them, Adobe, Chewy, NVIDIA. All these stocks cried out to be sold on the spike after earnings. On the other hand, we're still looking to accumulate stuff on this pullback. So I think there's only one technical indicator to look at, and that's price. And so 3,200, 3,250 has been my Maginot line. It roughly equates to a 10% drop in the S&P 500. And so far, September's playing out according to script, except that we compressed a lot of the selling into that three-day NASDAQ sell-off a week and a half ago. But still bullish in the names that we like. And
what are those names?
Well, the home builders, the quality tech stocks with proven cash flows like Adobe, NVIDIA, Microsoft, maybe Amazon. They're all pulling back. But there's one name that I think everybody needs to follow, which is FedEx. And FedEx didn't really get pounded on their earnings report yesterday. FedEx is the poster child for the shop at home, stay at home economy. And look what FedEx is doing. Everything flows through FedEx, basically, to get delivery. And I think as long as FedEx maintains that very steep uptrend, obviously we're going to get a pullback in here from that earnings spike, that the market's in good hands. But having said that, if we break the 3,200 level, then I'll start being cautious and let the stops take me out of the positions that we like. I think buying puts ahead of that is unnecessary. Selling stocks on strength is okay. It's actually a good thing to do in here.
That goes against what, that kind of fits what we were saying earlier. I don't know. It's just a weird time. So Mark, how would you approach the market now? We've got sort of a lack of real catalyst here for the next, I guess, month until we get the next earnings season, and then the election is sort of within that window. So for the next 3-4 weeks, how would you tactically approach this?
I would buy oversold as long as Chaykin and money flow stays positive and they hold their long-term trend lines. So a lot of these stocks are at their long-term trend lines now. Amazon and the like are there, but I think you still got to buy dips. Remember, a lot, I don't know what your listeners are positioned in, but the bigger numbers say that individuals have trillions of dollars in money market funds, so they're still not participating, and the institutions are coming in, but they're basically on the sidelines. So the one demographic that's clear cut to me is home building. They had a really nice correction, 10 to 15% down into the lows. I guess it was the last time I was on, Thursday, 2 weeks ago, Wednesday. And then they rallied up to equal their old highs. I think you have to wait for another pullback. But with interest rates at zero and with the trends out of the city, even if they don't accelerate but just maintain the pace, someone said there's 15,000 people a day moving out of New York City. Then the home builder is a place to be.
You said you would buy something as long as the chicken money flow stayed positive. But can you explain chicken money flow?
Yeah, we look back over 21 days. It's an indicator that's been around for 39 years, since 1981, publicly available. It looks at where a stock closes in its range and relates that to the volume. So if you get a stock that's typically closing high up in its range, that means that the sellers have been satisfied early in the day and there's latent buying at the end of the day, whether it's day traders, algorithmic traders, or real people buying it. On the other hand, weak stocks tend to close lower in their range. It's an old concept. It was pioneered by Larry Williams and Joe Granville, in a sense. And we look back over 21 days. So if you look at a stock like Adobe, NVIDIA, these are stocks that had pullbacks from the April breakout, but chicken money flow stayed positive. And that tells us that smart money continues to buy on weakness. It's a great way to see if smart money is contributing to the rally or taking advantage of the rally.
And this indicator is on most, I would think, if not every major trading platform, right? It's a technical indicator.
It's a technical indicator that measures supply and demand. It's on every online brokerage platform, stockcharts.com, you name it. It's been there for 40 years, been doing a great job in this bull market of identifying the stocks that you want to buy on dips. And some of these dips are very shallow. Now they're getting a little more typical in that we're getting some nice oversolds under the 21-day average. But that's why I say it's a bifurcated market. I'm a big fan of selling on strength. So even yesterday morning, you had an upgrade on NVIDIA. You had the Adobe earnings report. They spiked up 2%. It wasn't the 4 or 5% that we've been used to. But look where they closed and look where they're trading pre-market. There's a 6% swing. So even a intermediate investor who's in early, let's say you bought NVIDIA at 360 where we first recommended it, it's okay to take a profit and then look to buy it back on a 6 to 7% pullback. That's a big pullback in these mega cap tech names.
Mark, we're on the line with Mark Chaykin of Chaykin Analytics. Joins our show every couple of weeks to give his technical and fundamental outlook on the market. Mark, I just want to go back. I want to look at, you know, the meltdown in March and April and the market coming back in May and June. And, you know, myself included, and I think Dennis could attest to the same thing. We were a non-believer in the rally at first, and we kind of stayed in the bearish camp. I think it's safe to say that you were in that camp too. You turned. There was a point, and I know it was several hundred handles ago in the S&Ps, that you turned, and now you're on the bullish side. You're looking for the pullback. It's always important to catch turns in the market, major turns in the market. With the expiration coming up, the Quad Witch expiration, you know, do you think this is maybe a turning point for, you know, a down 3 to 6 month cycle, or what, you know, like way beyond 3,200, like 3,000 or 2,800 or 2,700 wouldn't even be out of the ordinary. What's your trigger for more than this is just a pullback to buy, whereas, you know, we're going to go spend some time under 3,000 in the S&P.
Well, 3,200 is the trigger. And the reason is when you get to a 10% or more closing decline in the S&P 500, you're out of the pullback range and you're into the correction range, which is 10 to 20%. It takes longer. I think that what viewers should know is that pullbacks tend to last a month, and they average 7%. That's exactly where you are in the S&P 500. 7% pullback intraday to intraday, maybe 8%. And it hasn't even lasted a month. So I don't think that the uptrend has been broken. I think the much talked about Fed put is real. And, you know, what else can the Fed do in terms of bullets? Buy S&P futures. Come on, guys. Janet Yellen wrote about that in August in an editorial. She said, what's next? Are they going to buy futures? That was like the canary in the coal mine. If things break, I think the Fed will buy stock index futures. Don't have any proof of that, but there's more than enough.
They already are, Mark.
Well, they already are.
Does that change after the election if we do get Biden, though? Does that change?
No, I think the Fed is probably going to be more accommodative to the economy if Biden wins, because I think that Powell is sensitive to looking political, and obviously with Trump being the cheerleader for the stock market and the reopening economy, you could say that the more dovish that the Fed is, the more they're playing into Trump's reelection plans. So if the Fed and Powell are genuinely concerned about the state of the economy, and it's fragile, guys, that your concerns are founded, not unfounded. But if the Fed is genuinely concerned, then I think, particularly since Biden may start talking about rolling back the tax cut, which could create some short-term weakness after the election, Joel, I agree with you there, that the Fed's going to remain accommodative. I mean, you know, anybody in Washington knows that there's a changing of the guard. And, you know, Powell didn't say we're going to keep interest rates low, but only if Trump is the president. He basically said because the economy is soft and without additional fiscal stimulus, we got to do everything we can. But that's another key point, and that speaks to, you know, will the market respond on the upside without another stimulus package? Part of yesterday's early strength, and even after the Fed, was the fact that it looked like Mark Meadows was caving a bit and saying that a bigger stimulus bill was right around the corner. So I think if you're looking for an upside catalyst, it would be that stimulus bill, because it's desperately needed. Companies cannot afford to rehire without a stimulus bill. People look at retail sales. They dipped in part because the PPP is off, you know, and not been replaced. And the unemployment bonanza is no longer what it was. So there's a lot of dynamics, but markets tend to rally before an election. And you're also seeing a rotational shift. Stocks like Procter & Gamble suddenly have a bullish power gauge rating. I think where you have to be careful, Joel, to your point, stocks like Shopify, where the fundamentals are underwhelming the stock price. So Shopify picked up a bearish rating in Chaikin for the first time in 6 months.
Well, the trend's broken and the valuation's insane.
So those are the stocks you really have to be careful. If stocks like Zoom and Chewy, which, you know, we like from a technical point of view, Chewy from a fundamental, Peloton, if these stocks break support, then you got to be careful about those stocks. But this really is a market of stocks and has been since April. And if you're focusing on the right sectors and industry groups, and right now that's technology and some consumer discretionary a la home builders and Amazon, then I think you're going to be okay here being long. But again, two-way market. Sell the spikes when you get them. They're almost every week you get a saleable spike, but look for buying opportunities on dips.
All right. Mark Chaikin with more of a macro view on today's show. Mark, thanks so much for the time.
Joel's frowning. I don't think Joel liked the macro view. I can be controversial, Joel.
Joel just frowns. It's what he does.
No. It's a difficult market right now, and I don't see it getting any easier over the next 2 months or through the end of the year.
Joel's bearish.
Yeah.
No, wall of worry. I mean, you nailed it in your intro. Market climbs a wall of worry. When everything is rosy, you don't want to be buying them. You want to be selling them. And everything is not rosy right now. I agree with you there. By the way, Tesla, which had a bullish rating and had that 25% run up before and after the split, now has a neutral rating.
So you'd be a seller. It's had such a big pop here. 8-day rally from 329 to 4. Well, I got over 450. So basically getting 2/3 of the losses back from the wicked 5-day sell-off. So you'd be a seller of that Tesla rally?
As a trader, I'd be a seller. I mean, long-term, you know, people believe the $2 trillion valuation theory. Maybe they're going to be right. But as a trader, I would sell the rally.
All right, Mark, thanks for the time today. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
Pleasure. Be good.
All right, we just got initial jobless claims for whatever that's worth. Not sure
not really.
If we care as much about that now as we did perhaps back in March, April, and May, it was worse than expected for last week. So there was that. Same story for continuing claims is getting better. But in any case, 8:30 here, we're going to have our next guest, Will Hershey, on in 5 minutes. Let's go to some individual stocks here since we haven't discussed too many today. Pre-market stock or mover of the day to the upside is Sorrento, SRNE. The news here, it is COVID related. They got approval from the FDA to proceed with a phase 1 clinical trial of their COVID drug that I guess neutralizes antibodies in COVID patients. So
I think all these stocks are sells on the rallies. I know I've been taking some heat from a few people on Novavax because it's come back a long ways in the last little bit. I mean, yeah, the COVID vaccine trade has come back. Moderna, Novavax, Sorrento. I think it stalls out eventually, and eventually these stocks start going back down. I don't know. Sorrento's a wild one. It could go to 13, 14. It could do anything. I mean, look at Kodak yesterday. You know, when you start squeezing them, they can get just silly. And obviously Kodak, you know, went from, at 860 or 870, we were talking on the show, and ended up going over $11. It eventually did crater and give it back. But you're squeezing them in Sorrento a little bit here this morning. I'm not sure what the short interest is, but anybody who has shorts getting squeezed. Up 33%. It's a nice pop. And when I come into this stuff, I mean, it's harder to say, okay, I'm going to short it here because you don't know where it's going to go. But if I'm long this, I'm using these rallies, just like Mark just said, I'm using these rallies to sell, selling into the strength. I mean, I think Novavax is giving you a fantastic opportunity to get the hell out because I do think when the dust settles here, I think Novavax is going to be a lot lower. But right now, they're rebuying these vaccine plays. I'd use the opportunity to get the hell out, my opinion.
Nice area to focus on for Sorrento traders. You did just sneak over $12, going to $12.10. And then you go over to the dailies here, and you see a couple highs right in that area, 11.72, 11.90. So that's the bogey. You get 12, get over 12, things open up to 13.13 based on on the daily chart. But backed off 90 cents of it. The longer it takes, and I've explained this before, when you get a pre-market high like that, and the longer it takes to get over that pre-market high and close it, or, you know, close above it, then you got more chance for a follow through on the downside. And a good example was FedEx yesterday, traded 262, almost 262 in the pre-market.
Yeah.
Never saw that during the regular session. So, you know, if you're super momentum, you want to, you know, see this thing go to 13, 14. Well, first see if it can take out the pre-market high.
And then as far as stocks moving to the downside this morning,
today,
Play is probably your leader, one of your leaders here. The company, according to the Wall Street Journal, warned that if they can't reach a deal with their lenders, they may have to file for bankruptcy.
What stock are you talking? I'm sorry, I missed it.
Dave and Buster's, Play.
What are they saying? They're saying bankruptcy?
If they cannot reach a deal with their lenders, they may have to file.
The stock's at $17. And they're talking about filing for bankruptcy? So obviously something's, you know, disconnected there because the stock doesn't show anything. Like, it's not like it's Pier 1 imports and it's trading down at a buck. I mean, you know, I guess I don't even know Pier 1 imports on the board anymore. But I mean, it was the longest to go off. But I mean, we're talking, you know, we've been talking about this potential to happen. I'm just, you know, surprised that the stock's still at $17 and now they're talking about bankruptcy. I mean, it's impressive that the stock's holding up that well, only down 10%, because that's a horrible headline.
You know what? This may have been a nugget that was buried in the earnings report last week. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure if this is new information.
We had earnings, but we might go bankrupt. I don't know. All I know is when stocks talking about bankruptcy, it doesn't make me really overly excited to buy them. They're not all going to turn out to be PCG and, you know, survive through a bankruptcy and have equity value. usually when stocks go through bankruptcy, the equity shareholders get wiped out. So that's nervous. Like, I'd be nervous on that, but I challenge, you know, I'd assume they're probably going to get the money or the stock would be at $17.
You did dip under 16. You got to 15.61, and now you're back up at 17.50. So I'd keep an eye on that 17.50, see if we can get into that. I'm sure a lot of people would like to see the bottom of yesterday's range at 18.23. Falling back, and I mean, this stock's not that far off. Well, I mean, it's moved off its March lows, but in comparison to everything else, it really has not had much of a rally. You have a 3-day low at 16.10. I'm not exactly what happened on the 14th, but I'd use that now that we've pulled back off the 17.50 level. Use 16.10 as potential support above the pre-market low. We're leaking, melting.
Joel. Yeah, we're melting down. I mean, Apple's through the 110 now. You got to sell the rallies. You're going to get more rallies. I think you want to lighten up. If you're all in and you're on margin, you absolutely don't want to be there right now. I hate to say, I know there's a lot of people messaging me, you know, on different stocks. They talk like Rocket and different, you know, you've got to be careful. When you are investing, and if you're new and you're sitting on margin, it can be really dangerous. And I mean, yes, I've bought some Rocket. It looks like it's going to break down. So, you know, here talking against my book here too, I stuck some in the retirement account because I like the story, believe in the Detroit, and I like the Jason Raznick pick here. But with that being said, the technicals look really crappy on RKT. It's a stock that's widely followed, and it looks like it's ready to break down here again. And, you know, I don't see much until $20. So I think you could see RKT hit 20. I'll probably add to it. But if you're sitting on margin with some of these positions and you're like, you know, like, oh, it's got to come back and you're hoping it's going to come back or I'm in trouble, don't get yourself in that situation. You know, stay diversified in your trading portfolio and don't, I don't like investing on margin at all. I trade with margin, but you know, I trade market neutral. So what does that mean? I have equal longs and equal shorts. So like today, I'm long a lot of stocks, but I'm short a lot of stocks too. And so my net impact is I'm not getting hit. And people say, well, how do you make money if you're trading market neutral? Well, I've got some stocks that I believe in the story that I believe are going to outperform. And I got some stocks that I think are really weak and are going to underperform. And, you know, and obviously the last couple of days I've been, you know, rotating a little bit, especially into a little more value names. Like right now, I'm more inclined to buy the General Electrics of the world, believe it or not, my trading portfolio, not my investing portfolio, because these, you know, started to show the turn yesterday at 2:00. So if you look at the IWM this morning, you look at the Qs are significantly lower than IWM. You saw a nice spike in a lot of value names yesterday. So the value love comes back into play, and identifying those trends can make you some money. Right now, the Momo stuff, big time out of favor.
All right, we talk about stories here. Who has a hotter story right now than sports betting and esports? Our next guest can speak to that. Will Hershey is on with us. He is the co-founder and CEO of Roundhill Investments. They've got the Nerd ETF, the BETZ ETF. Will, good morning.
Morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
So we've been talking about the names in the space of a lot of late. They've been in the news. DraftKings has announced a number of partnerships of late. It's a very hot space. Give us the rundown on the sports betting industry right now, sort of where it's at. Your fund in particular has a lot of overseas exposure. So just talk about where the space is right now.
Sure. I think really all the excitement that we're seeing in the market right now is really, even though we have a lot of that exposure in Europe, Australia, UK, the excitement's all about the US market, right? And what we're seeing going on a global basis is, taking a step back, gambling is the largest form of entertainment globally. So you're talking about $500 billion of gross gaming revenues per year. And we're seeing two things go on from kind of a secular standpoint, and then secondly, from kind of more of a short-term catalyst. The secular transition is something we're seeing kind of across the board, which is a shift from a physical economy to a digital economy. And that kind of same concept is playing out, where consumers are now open to the concept of, instead of going to a casino or going to a physical sports book, are now comfortable placing those bets online. And that's something that we're going to continue to see. And in the U.S., I think, we're just starting to have various states roll out kind of regulation and legalization. Remember, on a federal level, sports betting only became, you know, kind of legal with the repeal of PASPA in 2018. So this is kind of a new phenomenon for the U.S. And what you're seeing in the U.S. is really it's a gold rush. And you're seeing, you know, the DraftKings partnership with the ESPN. I mean, I don't know if you guys watch Monday Night Football, but it felt like every single commercial was PointsBet or DraftKings or FanDuel. And I think kind of on the shorter term catalyst, but we're going to start to see this play out, is you have states that, as you're kind of in the wake of coronavirus and some of them coming into it even, have budget deficits. And, you know, what better way to kind of turn on the switch and shift from a black market to a regulated market, collect meaningful tax revenues by kind of state by state legalization. And I think that the market's kind of getting excited for that. But I mean, this is gold rush time. This is, no pun intended, inning one or two in kind of the U.S. sports betting story.
Do you think that the public markets are like behind in a way, and that the recent enthusiasm is just investors playing catch up to, it's been a pretty slow developing theme. You mentioned, you know, the law changed 2 years ago now, right? So yeah, it's taken a while for this to develop in the public markets. Is that part of it?
I think that's part of it. I think you also had, I mean, let's remember where we were, you know, only a couple months ago. We didn't know if, you know, what sports were going to get played, if any. We just got news yesterday that the Big Ten's actually going to go ahead with their season. I mean, there's been so much uncertainty just around whether sports themselves are going to get played that I think in that sense, kind of from a shorter term standpoint, sure, the market's definitely kind of playing catch up. But also remember that kind of a lot of these names, particularly U.S. listed names that people are starting to get really excited about are relatively new stories. You know, DraftKings only came public via SPAC earlier this year. Penn National is a company that's been around for a long time, but the story completely shifted overnight when they invested into Barstool Sports, and now they're kind of trying to become that digital first platform. So I think there's just so many catalysts on a day-to-day basis now that's really kind of driving it. But no, you're absolutely right. I mean, this has been in motion for several years. But I think finally we're getting to the point now where, you know, there's enough kind of states that are up and running that the data is starting to play out. And actually, just over the last couple of days, we've seen kind of the figures come out from New Jersey, from Pennsylvania, yeah, like all-time highs in terms of the amount wagered, kind of we call it handle, in each of these states. And I think that just speaks to pent-up demand and kind of this more concept of people are comfortable betting from their phones.
Can you outline just the types of companies that the BETZ ETF is holding in terms of, you know, where they fall on the industry spectrum?
Sure. So the first one is pretty straightforward, and it's the sportsbook operator. So actually the companies that are kind of offering these B2C platforms, in some cases they're still doing it brick and mortar, but really we're interested in the ones that are kind of offering these mobile betting platforms. Then you've got iGaming companies. It's interesting because all the attention's on sports betting right now, and I think for good reason. You know, everyone's excited for the return of sports, but iGaming, which is really online poker, online slots, online casino, is the long-term higher margin moneymaker where a lot of these sports books are going to end up kind of making most of their money is in iGaming. And there are some players that are kind of more pure plays on that sector. We have an ETF. Then you have technology providers. So an example, I think a lot of people, it was a darling there for a second, is GAN.
A lot of people in our chat asking, I think, for your thoughts on GAN.
We can go there right now if you want. let me finish and we'll get to GAN. But anyway, the technology providers like a GAN, like a Canby, I mean, these are kind of your picks and shovels way of playing the industry, right? They're licensing their technology to the front end, to the companies that are kind of utilizing it for their front ends. Last two groups are lead generation, which we'll see what happens with the lead gen companies. Historically, the kind of everything's all about customer acquisition in the gambling business. It's, you're seeing it front and center right now with these media partnerships. I mean, there's been over the last 12 months, there's been like five major media partnerships, but historically companies that focus on gambling related lead generation has been an interesting place. And then the last grouping, which, there's different companies are taking a different approach to mobile and digital, but you do have the brick and mortar casinos that are starting to get involved. Look at MGM through BetMGM. They have a JV with GVC. Caesars is also starting to make a push into online. So they kind of rounded out. But I think they're, you know, if you look at how the casino, you know, the brick and mortar casinos have performed versus the mobile first sports books, it's kind of night and day. But that's the nice concept that you get with the thematic ETF. You're getting kind of different ways to play the same story.
All right. You mentioned GAN. It was a darling. It's not anymore. A lot of people in our chat have been asking us about this one. So I'll ask you about GAN. What's going on there?
Yeah, I think people also need to take a step back and remember that GAN was listed in London before they listed in the U.S. And if you look at the chart going back to if you were a shareholder, you know, in UK, it's still well above where it was trading. And I think that actually speaks to a different phenomenon, which is kind of this valuation arbitrage, where the U.S. listed names that offer pure play exposure here trading at a way higher multiple than what they are in Sweden. In the UK. But in terms of GAN, I mean, I think when the earnings report came out, they kind of snuck in the headline that they were losing the FanDuel sportsbook business. At the same time, like that was something they had highlighted in their S1. I don't think that should have been a surprise to anyone. And now I think what you've seen over the last couple of days is a sell-off related to Penn. I think some parts of the market were expecting that they were going to get, given that they have Penn's social gaming platform, casino business, that they were going to get the sports book and the Barstool rollout as well. They didn't get that. That went to GTG, which is an Australian firm. So I think there's kind of been a couple negative catalysts, if you will. But look, I mean, they're still positioned to kind of be one of the premier third-party providers to the industry. And I think they're probably going to get Barstool and Penn's iGaming business, which, as I mentioned, I think is the really interesting long-term play here. Anyway, they still have FanDuel's iGaming business too. So I wouldn't get too overly worried, but, you know, it trades at a fancy multiple as well.
It does. Yeah, that's what happens. Joel, I think you had some.
Yeah, I mean, they just, you know, looking, you know, far out here. I mean, they don't call Las Vegas Las Wages for nothing, right? I mean, all those beautiful hotels and free meals and everything. I mean, they do that because people lose, right? Majority of the people lose money at casinos and wagering or the track or whatever. I mean, there's a very few. I mean, the books are the ones that make the money, and that's what you're seeing now. I mean, is there just an endless supply of money coming from consumers to spend on gambling and wagering and really in this kind of economic environment? Is it just something that's just perpetual? The losers are just going to drop out and new people are going to come in, or the losers are going to go get more money and mortgage their house and lose more? Do you see, you know, is it just an endless supply of money to streaming into the gambling market?
I mean, you know, I kind of think so. And it's really difficult to get a handle on what the black market looks like here. I mean, I can speak personally, you know, don't come and arrest me, but I've placed bets before, you know, pre 2018. Yeah. And I think a lot of people just view it as entertainment. And I don't think the casual sports bettor expects to make a ton of money doing it. I think it's just another way to kind of engage with content. And when I look at younger generations and I look at what's going on with Major League Baseball, why isn't Major League Baseball as successful with Gen Z and younger generations? I think it's because the game is slow and there's not kind of that feeling of engagement and excitement throughout the game. And I think what sports betting really offers is kind of this second derivative form of engagement, especially as we get to the point where we've really perfected live in-game betting, where you can feel like you're part of it. And I think that, you know, that's kind of a longer term trend that I think is definitely going to continue. But yeah, I mean, there's, you know, it's very difficult to measure the size of the black market here. But as I mentioned, the largest form of entertainment globally, you know, people have fun, you know, whether it's betting on sports or, you know, playing blackjack. I don't think that stops.
So it's interesting that you've got the BETZ ETF and also the Nerd ETF. I was listening to your interview on the Trillions podcast this morning. It would seem that, you know, there's only so much time in the day. People only have so much attention. It would seem that in some respects, esports and sports betting are competing forces in a way.
Yeah. I mean, I think in theory, anything that's entertainment is competing with one another. I think going to the esports concept, on a few conference calls ago, Reed Hastings said that the biggest competitor for Netflix wasn't HBO, it's Fortnite, right? And I think all of these different entertainment platforms are competing with one another. However, I mean, when you look at sports betting, you know, whether daily fantasy or actually placing a bet, it's kind of like you set your lineup or you place your bet, and you know, that's kind of it. And I think the time that it takes to do that is intentionally, you know, you can do it really quickly. So I think it maybe competes less than some of these others where it's really being as engaged. But no, I mean, look, that's the name of the game right now. And I think actually you kind of, in a way, allude to something that I think is going to be really interesting, which is more and more entertainment is getting free to consume. And I could see an environment where sports books move VIGs closer and closer to zero over time. And that's kind of a play where you figure out other monetization channels, right? We've seen that with video games where they're now free to play. They monetize you within the game. You know, advertising on Twitch and different game streaming platforms. I mean, it's all a play for eyeballs at the end of the day.
Just going back to just the sports betting here, are there any names that you think investors don't know about but should know about? So the opposite of GAN, perhaps.
Yeah, no. So not a recommendation. Let me just clarify that. But I do think some of the most interesting names, I don't know if listeners, viewers can play outside of the US, but I honestly think they're some of the most interesting ones. I look at Flutter, which is the parent of FanDuel, the parent of PokerStars, Paddy Power, Betfair, listed in London. I think there might be an ADR. I don't know how liquid it is. And I'd always typically kind of recommend that if you can play in the local where there's more liquidity, that's usually better. If you look at how they're trading, you know, DraftKings is trading at, you know, I don't know what the multiple is now on sale. We're talking about multiples on sales. For Flutter, we're talking about a multiple on real net income and earnings. And they have the same tailwinds as well. And they're very well positioned within the US. FanDuel, I think, could be the winner in the US. They're one I like. And then if you're a fan of GAN, but you know, maybe you're looking to switch, I think Kambi, which is actually listed in Sweden, has a similar story to GAN, but they're actually, you know, winning new business and winning new contracts and kind of focused on that B2B sportsbook side.
Oh, real fast, Joel. Flutter has a ticker in the U.S. It's OTC. It's PDYPY. And the other one was say it again.
Kambi. I don't think they have an ADR.
Okay.
Flutter is the one that bought our Stars group, right, Dennis?
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. That
me
one.
And Joel were too early on this trade. We bought Stars way too early, like 2 years, 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And it leaked and leaked and leaked. Eventually got bought by Flutter, but we were way too early.
Yeah, and then we sold out after the deal, and then it kept on going. I just want to ask you just as far as intra-game wagering and, you know, one site that I was involved with, designing trading software for trade sports. And that was like the original one. And I know it kind of had a muddled past with John DeLady, the founder and everything. But, you know, when is that? I mean, that could be a big boon, where you have the intra-game wagering and football games used to, like, you know, there'd be a market and then there'd be a play and there'd be no market. I mean, what happened to trade sports, and when do you see intra-game wagering becoming more, you know, more of a thing?
Yeah, I mean, we're somewhat there in the sense that, you know, lines are offered during halftime on the rest of the game or, you know, on a quarter. But I think what you're really talking about is kind of play by play stuff.
Yeah.
I think that where that's really interesting. I mean, I think in certain sports, you kind of can't do it. Right. I mean, like for hockey, for example. Right. You can imagine how that's somewhat difficult to try. And I guess there's not that many wagers to really place in that situation. But I mean, that's the long term holy grail here is just, you know, kind of, you know,
are any of these companies going that way? Because that was the one that I would really, that's the one that I'd really get interested in.
You know, I don't know off the top of my head who's the best, but you're really going to want to look at the data providers there. Because think about, I mean, the whole play there is mitigating risk and offering lines that make sense in real time that people can't necessarily take advantage of. And I don't know who it is that's probably the leader there. I can get back to you guys. But I would say this. I think this is going to – and you've heard DraftKings kind of mention this too. I think this is why DraftKings valuation is where it is. Imagine a world where DraftKings is just your platform to bet or wager on anything that's going on in the world, kind of intra-game, if you will, whether it's The Bachelor or a basketball game or whatever. And I think that's like the kind of long-term vision of where this could go. I know that sounds crazy. Maybe not The Bachelor.
No, I mean, I know exactly what you're talking about. I had a great trade in American Idol when that guy – what was that guy's name? Taylor?
Taylor Hex.
Taylor Hicks, yeah, I was there, and I had my finger on my platform, and it looked like the guy was going to announce a tee, and it was like 80% probability, and I just lifted offers, and I locked it up at 99. I just swept out the book, and the contract.
You armed American Idol.
Yeah, that was fun. All right. That was fun. I miss that. I miss that a lot. But all right, thanks a lot. We kept you a long time here, yeah. And we'll let you go. We got to cover some stocks. But interesting, we'll get you back on again. And trade sports, were you familiar with? I just got to ask that again. That was.
I'm not. I'm sure others wiser than I are, though. Thank you, guys. This is great.
All right, have a good one.
All right, thanks a lot, thanks, Will. We appreciate the time. Will Hirsch again, co-founder and CEO of Roundhill Investments, BETZ ETF and Nerd ETFs. All right, to the chat we go. We got a few minutes here left in the show. Joel, that was a really, really good.
I got a bad one. I got a bad trade sports story.
That was too. Really good. That was really
you fun. Want a bad one?
Yeah, sure. Give us a bad
one. I had, and believe it or not, I don't even know what year this was. I loaded up on Michigan State, you know, to win the NCAA tournament.
Okay.
And they were playing on a Saturday night, and Lisa and I went out with some friends, and she asked me to take the babysitter home. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I think they were playing North Carolina. And they were up by like 14. And I didn't put any orders out. And so I dropped the babysitter off, and I'm driving back, and Carolina starts coming back. They start coming back. I got in, and I just the contract traded up to like 80. I came in, it was like 25% probability. I just started smashing bids, you know, because you could have large positions in that for not much money. So, that was fun. And Michigan State, of course, let me down, but I wish I would have had some automated trading for that one. That would have been a nice
trade. Got the high frequency trading going for the trade sports. Already out there, probably.
Yeah, that's what you get. All right.
All right, what else do we got? We haven't covered any stocks today.
Tickers. Just three minutes of tickers.
Microsoft here, guys. Let's take a look.
Market's getting crushed, Dennis. What are you doing out there?
I'm still long Microsoft. It's perilously looking through the 200 here now. That is key support. It needs to bounce 197.51. I'm sticking with it because I believe in this long-term story still, but as the short-term trend is broken, man, a lot of trends are broken right now. Broken trends, broken markets. Next. We'll give Joel the next one.
Same story here, I think, with Kroger. I mean.
Joel, you taking Kroger?
You know what? They slammed this off a decent report, so I don't know what the catalyst is coming forward. I'll stick with Warren on this one. I'll wait for it to make a couple lows in the same area and then, make a little bit of turn, maybe just under this third. You're at some critical support right now, just under $32, $31.77, $31.90, $31.78. So let's see if the big boys step up here, must-hold level for Kroger.
Defensive play, I'd be a buyer at 30.
Yeah.
Yep. It's another $2 lower. I'm looking to get back in.
All right. We haven't talked Workhorse all week. I don't know if you talked about it when I was out, but I haven't looked at Workhorse chart in 3 weeks.
It's been running, and it's been running up, and the EV plays have still been hot. We know even some of the SPAC EV plays have been hot. Again, it's going to be with that contract. So that contract comes out, this thing's going to double if they get it. We're talking the USPS contract. If they don't get it, it's going to get halved probably. So there's a binary event that's going to happen here eventually. It's running, you know, the valuation's maybe getting a little bit stretched, but you know, technicals still look good. Okay, a lot. But, you know, technicals still look good. Trend's your friend. It's holding up, but this kind of starts getting smacked on a day like this.
It's coming off the high. I'd use a 24.75. I give it another buck here. That splits the lows from the last two sessions. So if it doesn't hold there, I'm looking for more downside on it. Coming back on the upside, if you sniff that close 26.82, that's all time closing high, I think you'll find mounds of sellers there. I'd even go out
mounds
in 26.70.
McDonald's low key all time high.
What? Did McDonald's hit all-time high?
Yep. Yep.
Wow, that's unbelievable. That's unbelievable. This is a stock that I wanted to buy in the COVID crisis. I never did. And, you know, obviously we got down at 124, and we basically, you know, you're up 85% since the lows here just back in March. So it's been an impressive run. Everybody's still going to McDonald's, even though some of the dining rooms are closed. I mean, I don't know, trend's your friend. It's defensive. Probably buyers on the pullback. I'm not chasing it.
Yeah,
I mean, yep, it's up so much. You know, the
224.81.
Not that cheap.
Was, yeah, 224.81. That's your all-time closing high. We are trading below that right now. So, 224.81, 225. I think is especially if you get a down market here, like what we're seeing. I think that's going to be resistance. That 226.72 could hold up for a while.
Are we allowed to go a day without talking about Nikola? I think we're allowed.
Nikola.
Right?
Nikola. It's holding up. It's still holding up. You know, the strength, the support at 30 has been incredible. So as long as it's above 30, take a shot. Remember, headline risk overnight, though. Whenever you're holding this overnight, there's risk. And if they uncover anything fraudulent, this thing could really get smacked. So, you know, just be careful in this one. But right now, tactical 30 is holding.
I wonder if what's bad for Nikola is good for Workhorse. You know, just so
now
that's a stretch. I've been talking about 30 bucks for the last couple days. Now, what you want to see is you want to see it get away from 30. You know, you don't want to see it hanging out.
It's had bad news, though, and it continues to bounce on every day. It comes out with a negative headline, and every day it bottoms near 30 and rallies. So, I mean, the strength and not obviously relative strength, but the strength on the negative headlines is impressive.
I agree.
So I will say that. There is buyers who want this stock around 30 and they believe in the story and they believe, you know, just think of this scenario where, hey, we uncover nothing, you know, and, you know, the regulators go away. I mean, the stock probably goes significantly higher. So it's not only a case where they could uncover something, they might uncover nothing. And the stock probably goes a lot higher then.
That's true. All right, that'll be a wrap for us. Let's see if we can get to 300 likes on today's show. I
want me to like you.
That would be appreciated. Thank you. I want to thank our guests, Mark Chaykin and Will
Liked. Hershey.
Thank you, Dennis. Thanks to everyone in our chat, the benzinga.com/premarketprepchat, the Benzinga Pro Chat, and our main chat, which is on YouTube. Please remember all the information from our broadcast are meant to be used as informational purposes, not for investing or trading advice. You can always catch a replay on YouTube or catch our podcast on every major podcast platform. Email us for any questions, comments, concerns, feedback, premarket@benzinga.com. Everyone have a great rest of your day. We'll see you in the afternoon.